It's time to relax. You know what that means? Glass of wine, your favorite easy chair, and of course, this podcast episode playing on your home stereo. So go on, indulge yourself. That's right, kick off your shoes, put your feet up, lean back and just enjoy the melodies. After all, podcast soothes even the savage beast.
What is up, Podheads? Back with the 4-year anniversary episode. My name is Tony. I am joined by Anthony. I am joined by Nate. We got a little run going with the original triumvirate back at it. And if you're just tuning in, this is the first time you've checked us out. We don't always start the episode that way, but we absolutely had to for this one. But yeah, how you guys doing tonight?
4 years strong, baby. I was thinking for this episode, we probably should have tried to see if we get one of those dudes on from 4 years strong, but we didn't. And here we are. I'm doing good. We just caught up for what, 20 minutes? Just, you know, I think we all consumed a beverage. How you doing, Nate? You good?
Yeah, nerds at the bar before nerds on the bar.
Yeah, I love it.
You're in the pub downstairs, man, which some people will see parts of the video probably down the line, but the pub that LeJean from Seven Dust absolutely loved.
Yeah, man, the Mantique Cave.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you remember antiquing from like the Jackass era?
Yeah, when you threw powder on somebody's face. Yeah.
Oh, man. What a time to be alive that was. Peak Jackass when you're like 12 and you try to recreate it with your buddies.
Oh, it was great.
Yep. Then the disclaimer came after. I think that, didn't they add that disclaimer after at the beginning where it's like full on 3 paragraphs, like do not replicate any of these stunts, blah, blah, blah. These are done by professionals. But for a while, those weren't there. So clearly, everyone watching that show is out in parking lots doing crazy shit. And
well, that started with Beavis and Butthead. They had to do that in that era because idiots. Oh, well. Well, maybe not idiots, just kids who are trying to.
Yeah. Us, basically. Being stupid. So, what are we doing tonight, boys? We're going to talk a little bit about what it means to be 4 years old as a podcast, which is mind-boggling to, I think, all of us, and maybe not to you, but it is to us, especially with the day-to-day and what goes into doing this, you know, putting out an episode once a week for 4 straight years. And then we're going to talk Offspring Smash, which turns 30 in a couple of weeks and is a record that I think we all ride for pretty hard and is very essential to, I think, probably all three of us's musical journey as music nerds and fans. So, yeah, that's kind of the layout for tonight.
4 years. We should have done like some stats of like podcasts in general and then segmented out to music pods of like what the average lifespan is. We've talked about briefly, but I think the average lifespan of a pod is 8 episodes. So we've, you know, destroyed that. You know, that's not talking about quality, but the quantity is there.
So many. Yeah, there's 200 plus actually of that back there. And I know we've got another one in the can. So we made it to 209 anyway.
At least. Nate, what were your expectations when we started this? Did you have any?
Well, it's funny. Yeah, because what you just said, I was thinking like the background to the podcast is like the organization, like the spreadsheets with like everything we want to talk about. So already we're going to get past that 8 because like, well, we got to cover these bases at least. And then that spreadsheet just keeps growing and growing and growing. So we're setting ourselves up for, you know, personal commitments at this point, you know, time and energy. But in terms of what were my expectations were, kind of like our interviews. I didn't really have any grand, you know, expectations on, okay, we're going to take over the world. I did think we were going to do some cool shit. I did not think we were going to get a fraction of the guests we got on. So it continues to blow me away. And just the quality of the content, you know, even our family and friends will always give us a pat on the back. But, you know, people are honest. I think at the end of the day that we have grown and you guys have definitely grown. I'm still learning how to edit. So thank you guys for picking up the slack there.
Still learning.
You're Nate's still learning. I'm going to send all the tracks over to you tonight.
You know what? You're the coworker that has like the Rosetta Stone checked out for 2 years, but never activated the code, but you're holding up the code.
Yeah.
How dare you?
That's a good point though, Nate. Like we started this as a funky radical bomb track as a sketch in our notebook, right? We didn't have any real like delusions of grandeur that we'd have any of the people that we've had on, let alone some of them multiple times some of them legends that have been around for 30, 40 years, people that just, they were always on the other side, and we were out in the crowd loving what they did, but then we get to have conversations with them. So to just starting with a list of, hey, let's talk about our favorite vinyl. Let's talk about this record. And now we're, you know, weekly talking to a bunch of people in the industry over the course of 4 years is, it's kind of mind-boggling. And we, it's hard to stop and smell the roses sometimes. And that's totally what this is. And if you don't like it and you want to skip to Smash, that's fine. But we don't do it enough. And I'm pretty proud of what the three of us were able to start and continue to do to this point.
Man, you guys summed it up pretty good. I have two thoughts, though. On that last, like, we don't stop and smell the roses. Every now and then I'll go on a website. Well, I mean, I'm on it every week because it gets updated, except for today. I haven't done it yet. But I'll go on our list of bands that we've had members from on. And it's like, man, like we did all that. You know what I mean? And we continue to do it. And I'm sure the names will get bigger. And some will be new bands that we, you know, discover. Some will be our favorite bands. And that's, I say this a lot when we reflect. I love not knowing what's next. Not knowing what's next at all. Second thing I'll say is, we did, Tone, when we first started, before we started, when we said we were going to do this, we went to a brewery with a notepad and just etched out, like, episode ideas.
We did.
Two things about that, though. There's no mention of interviews, I don't think. Second thing is, there were no guardrails with that. Like, I equate it, I was thinking about it tonight, and I equate it to starting a band with your buddies, but with no mention of what the band's going to sound like. Nothing. It's just, yeah. We just said, well, just we grabbed the equipment, and what you get is what you get. And that's so funny to me, because in hindsight, like, you would think we would have done more than that, but you didn't know what you didn't know. You just do it, you know?
Very true. And you're right. We went to that that brewery in Portland, Maine in January of 2020, not long after I kicked what was likely COVID, the first iteration, before we knew people had it and were getting it in our country, and to this point today. So we wrote down a bunch of just topic ideas and shot it off to Nate and said, we're doing this, right? And because Nate and I had joked about doing a podcast for years, even when you moved out to California, because the internet got better and it was like, we could still do this. And we cracked the mics open on, I think the night that we did it was the night that the world shut down in your basement, Anthony, and recorded episode one, which is still there. I'm sorry if you listen to it, but it's still there. And the rest is, as they say, 4 years of history. So you're right. No guardrails. Didn't know what we were going to sound like. Didn't know what we were going to do. And here we are today. Still trying to figure that out, probably, but having fun doing it.
But what I was going to say is, 3 months later, talking about goat whore. Remember that? It's just like, you don't know where.
True. And like 2 months later, Nate having a voicemail from Mark Weinstein from Amoeba saying that he'd come on and talk with us about what they were doing to kind of work for their employees during the pandemic, which is crazy. And then Greg, obviously, who we've had on now 7 times. And it's just wild. The whole thing's crazy.
Yeah, actually, now that you mentioned that, it's weird that interviews weren't part of the blueprint, because now it's such a core part of the podcast. It's something we look forward to. And outreach is, you know, I equate it to just knocking on people's doors randomly and like, maybe they'll open and answer. Like, they must get flooded by people. So the amount of guests that have come on and shared their time and become friends, like you said, it's mind-boggling. It doesn't make any sense. It's cool that we've gotten this far. It's amazing that people are that kind. And I think what you mentioned, Tone, on us kind of kicking the ideas around here and there, like, podcasts kind of took off in what, 2008, I guess?
Yeah, started around then with some of the big players, but had we done it, we'd be one of those players probably, weird enough.
I know, and again, I think about that often, but I also think that it was a time and place. It's good that we waited, and it's also awesome that it's the three of us, because there's the three, and even when it's just you two, like, there's so much perspective and personal story and reflection on that we can all kind of come to the middle because we grew up together. But I don't know, just opinions and takes on things are so varied. It really makes it interesting, even for us on the podcast. Again, it's Nerds at the Bar, but we're doing it for the world too, which is kind of neat.
We've come a long way from you just blasting Killing in the Name of, you know, right? In the
yeah,
in the whatever shitty car one of us was driving in 2002.
I had a just a memory of, we say how far we've come, and like, you know, we know how ridiculous that sounds, whatever. But anyway, do you guys remember, a little peek behind the curtain, when we landed the first interview with Mark Weinstein, we were so worried about like connectivity and connection that we had a pre-meeting the night before with him.
Oh yeah, we did.
And we just wanted to make sure, on Skype, want to make sure he could get in and how, if it sounded okay. And then like, I don't know if like, I'm trying to think, like, did he think we were going to record that night, or did he know it was just like a sound check? You know, I don't know.
We've come a long fucking way.
Like, if I was on the receiving end of that, I'd be like, what are these guys doing?
Yeah, we've come a long fucking way.
And you fumbled the intro like 10 times with him. Do you remember that, Nate?
Oh, yeah. I was so nervous, man. Because that felt like our big break. Like, holy shit. Like, this is the biggest record store on the planet. Like, this guy is willing to talk to us? What? And to your point earlier, like, interviews were never part of the plan. So it's just kind of random that I reached out. And then it turned into this frenzy, like, okay, he was down. Let's blow up everyone. And the pandemic's in full throttle. So everyone's obviously just sitting around. So those are our thoughts, at least.
Nate, two things there. Nate having the let's get this person, but not knowing any of the logistics of having it happen is so Nate, and I love it. And at one point, I don't know how many episodes back it was, but I had to take the power back and be the person who starts us off every time, because it just, we were wasting like a half an hour trying to figure out what to say at the beginning. So I just came up with the same thing and we just dive into it now.
Yeah, I think that was, I might have initiated that just because, like, no offense, Nate, you weren't good at it. And introspectively, no, I wasn't good at it. I'd spend like, you know, when I'd setting up, getting ready, I'm like, wow, what's the inflection on my voice? Blah, blah, blah. You know, you just overthink it. And then we end up recording it six times and it's like, Tone ends up doing it anyway.
Exactly.
And I'm not that good at it either, but I'm just less like, I'm just like, just fucking go. I'm just going to go not, for it.
Yeah, you're just letting it ride. You're not in your head trying to make it what it should be or what it could be. You're just rolling, which is that's where it should be. That's what it should be like anyway. That's what the podcast is.
I say this, we should mess with, you know, because there's a core weekly listeners. We should mess with it some week and you'd switch it up, Tone.
What, didn't we just do that this week?
That's right. This was it. I'm living in the past or future. I don't know.
Yeah, we did it. We did do it at the beginning of this episode. A little different than our typical, right? It was fun. That was fun to hear and be able to put into the episode. So shout out to you, Twan.
I'm not going to say how many takes that took, but it came out pretty good, I think.
For sure. Yeah,
I liked it a lot.
We don't just settle for nothing around here either. Like, we get the big guns, the golden pipes to give us the time to relax. That's fun.
I'll say this. Out of anyone that's ever been on our Zoom call, the guy with the golden pipes is... Who am I going to say? LeJean. It's LeJean.
Oh, yeah.
That dude. Definitely. And you told him that, Tone, I think. He had the golden pipe.
Did I really?
If it wasn't to him, it was in an episode. I remember hearing that.
I mean, it's true. His voice is fucking flawless. And still, he still sounds amazing.
I especially enjoyed that one. Let's see what's next.
Hey, you guys ready for story time before we get into Smash?
Yeah, story time.
Yep.
This is a tale of nerdvoyance. So I get out of work, get a call from my wife. Hey, our daughter wants a toy, a specific toy from Target. So I'm like, all right, I need to get out of the house. I've been in the house all day. So on the drive over from my house to Target, which is maybe 10 minutes, I put on Smash by The Offspring. You may have heard of the album. On the way there, and I get a few songs in, and we go in, we get the toy, we come out, and in my head, I'm like, I'm going to mix it up. I haven't listened to radio in ages. So my wife had the radio playing on WBLM 102.9. And I'm like, well, I don't want to listen to this. I want to listen to 94.3 WCYY. I turn it on. I'm in the parking lot. I'm about to back out of my spot. And what's on the radio?
Bullet in the Head by, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
The Offspring. Keep Them Separated. It was at the very end, Keep Them Separated. So in my head, I'm like, I didn't play my iPhone. And then I look and I'm like, yep, it came off. Out of any song in the history of music, alt rock radio, it played The Offspring. I mean, that's pretty crazy.
It is crazy. So the radio's listening. The phone's
guys,
listening.
Come on. The radio's listening. Something here.
I blame Rob. That was probably Rob who's listening in on our conversations, knowing we're going to do this. Actually, I don't even think he does know we're doing this. But yeah, man, that's nerdvoyance. And we've talked about that numerous times. Nerdvoyance is just when you're looking for it or you're not looking for it, and it finds its way into your kind of purview, and then it happens again and again and again. I mean, I don't know how many times it's happened at this point that we've seen we're gearing up to talk about something, and then bang, it shows up in our life, like unannounced, out of the blue, by no fault of our own. And it's just amazing. And it happens a lot more than you'd think.
I mean, it's the same idea of when you get like a new car and you recognize, like, you get a red color car and then you see them all on the road. You know, they've always been there, but now you're just noticing them.
You're seeing them more, yeah. Yep.
I think with us, it's more than that. Like, I haven't listened to the radio. I haven't listened to it. And the first song that comes up, and I know that gets a lot of love, Self-Esteem and Come Out and Play get a lot of love still on those stations. But man, that was, I listened to, it was the last 15 seconds of the song, and then I turned it off, and I was like, well, if they're going to throw Offspring at me, I'll just put the album on, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Nerdvoyance, it's epic. It's like a nerd boner.
You just remind me of that meme of the guy that's like, on maybe some history documentary, or it's like, that's crazy, man. And his hair is all. That's crazy.
The man. Aliens, the aliens guy.
Aliens guy. Yeah. Yeah. Aliens. <That's> a... And his hair is like up to here.
Yes. That's crazy, great. Man. Happens to me all the time.
Yeah. That's awesome. But yeah, we're going to talk about Smash. I mean, we kind of have to, right? I mean, this is a record that means, I think, a lot to all of us. I know it means a lot to me. It's the second CD I've ever owned. If you've listened to any of our episodes, that's been brought up more than once, because I'm a broken record and we'll say the same thing over and over again for 208 episodes. But I owned Counting Crows, August and Everything After, and then bought Offspring Smash as a 10-year-old. And yeah, the rest is history. Like, the two completely different records, but I couldn't get enough of Offspring back then as a 10-year-old. And to this day, I'd be lying if I didn't say it shaped who I was as a music fan. That, and then Dookie after. So those three records being a huge piece of what I am as a person.
Nate might know this, but I don't know. What were the steps that led you to owning that CD? Do you remember? Was it like Easter Basket? Was it
me?
Yeah. Was it the Mill Creek CD store? And like, what was it? Ooh. I'm always curious of this stuff. Like, I've heard you say that, but I've never thought about like who, how, why, you know?
So I was struggling to remember how I got into the band, like how I was made aware of them, because as a 9 and 10-year-old living with my mom and younger siblings, they weren't the ones pointing me towards Offspring, right? Like, it just wasn't happening for me at that point. But right, I remember being a, you know, 9 and 10-year-old and going to my grandmother's house as a kid, and she had cable. We didn't have cable until I was in 8th grade or 9th grade, but she had cable. So she had MTV. And if ever we had to stay there, I was like, can I go upstairs and watch music videos? Because that's what I want to do when I'm here. Because you guys have MTV and I don't have this. So I need it. And I remember seeing Nine Inch Nails Closer that way. I remember seeing Offspring Come Out and Play and Self-Esteem, among many other things. But that's where I first saw, you know, Dexter with the braided hair and Noodles down, you know, and then looking a little like Maynard in that Know Your Enemy video with his mullet. Those old ratty looking 90s videos. But I was like, who are these guys? So that's, I probably asked my mom to buy me the CD, and it didn't say much on it other than having the really amazing skeleton. And
yeah,
I had it, and she was cool about buying me music when I was that age, because I guess I could have been doing worse.
Does this record have the parental advisory sticker on it?
It must have, right? It's got a lot of, I mean, just bad habit.
Yeah. All right.
So bad habit alone.
You had a cool mom.
Which we'll get to.
You had a cool mom, but also you bought that instead of Nine Inch Nails, which also would have shaped you maybe completely different, at least with that record, those, you know, stark gets.
I'm kind of glad that I went the other way. And not that I don't love Nails. I mean, I ended up being a gigantic Nails fan in my late teens, early 20s. But Smash first was better, I think.
I know, because you mentioned it. The artwork is all time. Maybe we'll start there. It's like the X-ray. And I saw, I don't know if it was Self-Esteem or Come Out and Play, but the singles had a similar vibe to it, too. Like, they ran with that aesthetic. And actually, in the, I think it's the Self-Esteem video, it starts with some x-rays.
Yep.
Yeah. I, you know, studying up for this and remembering back to my youth, their aesthetic was pretty cool. And you mentioned Dexter with the braids. How long was that period for him? I don't remember.
I think it must have been short.
I think it was short.
Yeah,
it was probably up until after this record, right? Because I think then they were in the spotlight more, and we don't, I don't remember a ton of that after. He had shorter hair and not the braids, but he must have had them right up until this album cycle was finished.
And this was most people's exposure to them, was Self-Esteem, Come Out and Play. Certainly ours. And I was thinking about probably the East Coast's exposure to them, realistically. I mean, if you were maybe a teenager in the early 90s, you might have known about them, but...
Yeah, because Ignition, I owned Ignition after, but that was a record that made some noise out there, and that was 92. So that was, and then they had the self-titled record before that. So they've been around for a while at that point, but this is the one that popped them.
Well, remember, Tone, we had, when we chatted with Mike Hartsfield of Outspoken, he played a show, I think his first show was with The Offspring. Crazy. That was, yeah. That's the thing. A lot of people forget that they, when did they start? Early 80s?
I think it was late mid-80s. I'm not sure, though.
Yeah, the first record is, I think, 89? I'll fact-check that.
84 is when they started.
Oh, wow.
That makes sense, yeah.
Wow.
What were you guys' first? How'd you get into them?
It was the singles. It was, I don't know, I don't remember which one, but it was the singles, and it might have been through radio or MTV. Like, that was, if you think about it, 8, 9, 10, whatever age. I had an older sibling, but like she was listening to Jodeci and MTV Party to Go and things like that, which I love. I still love all that. We've talked about it. But this was kind of discover on your own, but with some help from, with, you know, some big players like MTV and, you know, terrestrial radio.
The original tastemakers of that time for us, right? I mean, that's seeing When I Come Around as a video, seeing any of that stuff, seeing Nine Inch Nails and just being like, I need this. This is what's big right now. Cool. Tom Petty's You Wreck Me. I remember that being a big single and a big video on MTV. And that's probably a big piece of why I'm a Petty fan. Like, it just was what it was.
Yeah, I didn't have MTV either. So for me, it was our neighbor just had like every CD that was out at the time in 1994. And it was just on a pile, just a stack. So they just had like this fun room with like this indoor swing and just stacks of records. It was like kind of a nerd heaven for me. So I remember seeing that record, and you mentioned the cover of it, and that one stood out like quite a bit. That one and the Weezer, Lou Alden.
Oh, good call. Yeah.
Yeah. But that was my exposure to it because I didn't have MTV, but I did see it later and saw those videos after the fact, you know, friends' houses that had cable, but definitely not the cool grandmother.
It's wild that we were able to have it hit us at that age, considering what it was and how uneasy it was to get our hands on it. Like, I could pull it up at any moment now, wherever I am, as long as I have a cell connection or internet. But back then, you needed to have the CD, right? And I mean, they even say it in the intro, this compact disc. Like, that's the way the world was then. Now I own it on vinyl too, but it's completely like set up for you to have to go out and buy it and listen to it that way.
Well, it's funny. If you weren't part of that era in the 90s and you heard that, oh, you found out about a band from MTV, like this modern... younger like youth would think, well, you were late to the game. And like from a year's perspective, yeah, we were. They've been around for 10 years or whatever. But at that age, it was no internet. It was nothing like that. Like that was the only form of media, well, radio and MTV, that you could have possibly found out about it. And then certainly word of mouth. But again, we're at an age where, you know, like my sister's not talking about it to me, or like my fifth grade buddies, you know, they're into cool music, but they just don't happen to know what this is. So there was still ways to be on the cutting edge, even in the MTV exposure era. And like, kudos to MTV. Like they could have put out anything, you know what I mean? And they put out this stuff, which was cool for us.
Yeah. Back when it was music television.
Yep. Yeah. We've lamented that before too. I'm very happy to have grown up in that generation. And we talk about that a lot too, that was our way to discover things, because I feel like the art then compared to what we see a lot today, and there's still music videos and there's still people seeing those, or a lot of them are on YouTube, right? Or Vivo or whatever. But back then it was an event when a band kind of popped and had a cool music video, or cool album art because that's how you found them, and it's just different today.
So what's going on with the name? It's one of those the situations. Like, the album cover just says Offspring, and I've always referred to them as the Offspring, but it's kind of one of those, like, Misfits purists known as Misfits. It's not the Misfits. Deftones purists known as Deftones. So with them, was it just Offspring back then?
That's a good question, man. I haven't
thought about that.
Aliens.
It's a good question, man. Yeah, I don't know. Because I think I'm going to look at a couple other album arts from that time and see. But I think there was the Offspring on Ignition, and I think it was on Self-Titled too.
Yeah, I'm running through the album covers in my head. I think you're spot on. You would be spot on, Tom.
Yeah, it's Makes the Offspring sense. On Ignition.
Yeah, and it's the Offspring on the Offspring.
Oh, weird. Wow. Yeah, so they must have been the Offspring.
It could have been like a real estate on the, you know what I mean? It, like, aesthetically, it just works, just Offspring.
It certainly works on the Smash, yeah. And I mean, that it's iconic at this point. And I remember, was it last year or the year before, Incendiary did the t-shirt rip. So
did you get
cool.
that, Tom?
Oh, I wish. No, those were like shows, I think.
Shows only, yeah.
Yeah, but so fucking cool. Like, I like when that stuff happens, and, you know, it's paying homage to a band that you probably loved growing up. Those guys probably loved growing up, and now they get to do their own kind of version of it. We've done it with pod art. We've been on the cover of Bohemian Rhapsody and the Blue Album and a few other different things. Yeah, yeah. So it's fun.
Yeah, Spose does it a lot too, right? On his records, or his merch. Yeah.
Yep.
It's dope.
Get Rich or Die Ryan.
Yeah. Wow. So drop the. So there was a Sean Parker in that era as well. Sounds like drop the. Just Offspring.
Yeah. Yeah. It was Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. From the Mickey Mouse Club.
All right. So let's talk tracks. And I think we're sequence nerds. We can talk about how we love the opener, because I think we all love the opener. It's a great way to start, especially coming out of that Time to Relax. It's like, wake up. This is actually what's happening. You're not relaxing. You're just going balls to the wall, right? Like, Nitro is so good. And then Bad Habit. Man, Bad Habit, when I heard that as a 10-year-old, I'm like, I am getting away with something right now. I am not supposed to have this CD. If my mom knew I was listening to a song about a dude with a fistful of steel driving down the, you know, the Pacific Coast Highway, just road raging it, I would have been tough. But yeah, just to start the record, we get those two songs.
How about that? Like, Bad Habit has such a sleeper intro with the bass.
Yeah, dude.
And it's like, actually, is it a, what song am I thinking of? There's a song where it's like, has a similar bass intro, and then it fucking knocks you on your ass. And it's, oh man. Oh, Quicksand. And then it comes in. It's like, God damn. Like, you can't do that on accident. I you know, maybe it did come on accident, but, you know, they knock you on your ass with Nitro, and then they give you, you know, you think you're getting a break, and you have no idea where the song's going. And then it comes in, and it's like, oh, okay, I haven't caught my breath yet, but here I am.
Yeah, they are very unpredictable on this record. And Noodles, like, his guitar work is just out there, too. Obviously, you have your, like, heavy rock riffs and whatnot. But just like the weird solos, like the, what is it? The breakdown on Genocide fucking just rips, you know? So there's definitely some creative energy coming from like four different angles, which, to your point, just brings it to that, I don't know what's coming next. Oh shit, I guess we're here now.
So I get down with Genocide big time. It's just a fast punk song. It's just a melodic punk song that is relentless and... Yeah.
Hooks for days.
Oh, it's
They proved it, what they were going to be. Like it that you don't think about that song being one that maybe shows what is in store for a band coming down the line. But I think that song absolutely does that. I mean, other ones too. But on that record, listening to it again, I'm like, this song makes it. This is a well written song, and like there's a hook, there's a vibe to it, there's a speed to it that's them that fits the punk thing. But then also like a catchiness to the chorus, and it shows you what they're able to do as a band at that point, and it was only going to get bigger from there, obviously.
Man, and actually, I always say context is key. Dexter's 58 right now, so 30 years ago, he's 28, so they probably wrote it when he was 26. Like, you're I don't know about you guys. At 26, Tone, we lived together at this age. I was still figuring out shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Like,
you're still figuring it out. And they produce this at that age. And I don't know how old the other guy, like Noodles is probably very similar age. But to be, I don't know, you'd have to do like a nerd study of the ages of bands when they break. I bet it's later. I bet it's 30s.
Yeah. Noodles is 61, by the way.
Oh, wow. She's a little older. So,
wow.
Man.
Shout out Greg Kay. There's a lot of cool bass line parts in this record. I think just like starts to tracks and like Bad Habit and then other things that just kind of really move the songs along that you don't always get with punk, I think, or this iteration of, you know, mainstream punk at that point now. But the two bands that brought it to the forefront had pretty cool bass things happening, Green Day and Offspring at this time. So shout out Greg Kay.
Is he still in the band? I don't think he is, right?
No.
I think the only two that are still original are Noodles and Dexter.
And this was Dexter's, I read this, it was his first album also having a guitar, right? He was just a solo frontman.
I think you're right, yeah.
You got to trust me on this one. I think I read it. I know I read it.
Then yeah, man, I agree.
But think about it. That's a big leap because that's a whole different live show. It really is. And I think we've talked about this is like, there's a reason why like the Used and the Taking Back Sundays, like the reason why a big part of why they got there is eclectic frontman just out in front. You know, there's a lot to focus on. That's an interesting move. And I don't know the story. I don't know if you guys know of why, like the why. I'd love to know. It worked, clearly. Proof's in the pudding. 30 years in, we're talking about it.
Probably wanted to beef up the sound a little bit, right?
Yeah. I think that's, and just, you know, have five members instead of six, you know, or whatever. Split the, or four members instead of five, so I'm just split the royalties.
I did not know that. That is a new fact for me. But Dexter's a pretty intuitive, smart guy. So I have a feeling he was probably just like, oh, you know what? I'm going to pick this up too. He's got a PhD in molecular biology. He's a pilot. So he's probably just like, fuck it. I'll just learn guitar too.
Yeah, he's definitely a smart dude. Obviously, we've had some stories on this podcast about him. Some that didn't see the light of day, but we'll never see the light of day because we were sworn to secrecy, but some good ones too from Alex and Crime and Stereo when they signed a Nitro back in, when was that, 2005, 2004? He is an eclectic dude with you know, being a pilot and being a front man for a punk band that, and absolutely, you know, lit the world on fire.
Let's keep it rolling here. Something to Believe In, another ripper. No skip on that one. And then you get into the two singles, Come Out and Play and Self-Esteem. And I was thinking of this in prep for this. Come Out and Play, that was a preview of what was to come with Americana.
Oh, yeah.
With Conspiracy One. Like, that was a free preview, you know, free preview. And I don't think we really knew it because it is a bit of an outlier on the album, right?
Definitely. Yep. This and What Happened to You. What Happened to You is very, very much different than the rest of the record.
Very ska. A lot of upstrokes happening on that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, Come Out and Play. My guess is that was the first song I ever heard by them. It probably was. It's classic. I will say I do skip it. If I listen to this album, I probably skip it just because you hear it, you know, so much. Self-Esteem, no skips, my friend. All right, I'll say it. Maybe top 10 song of the 90s.
Oh, easily. I would completely agree with that. Yes.
Lyrics. Yeah. All-time bass line, and it's very like Green Day, like it's very of the time.
Yeah.
But I think it was just by coincidence. It wasn't like direct influence. It was just a product of maybe coming from the same world, and that's where you go when you try to expand that sound. Self-Esteem, tracks on tracks on tracks. Nate, where are you at with Self-Esteem?
Everything you said and more. Like the storyline, like you're following it the whole time. And like, you know, the instrumentals to go along with it, like you feel for him in that song, you know, so there's an emotional connection. You're like, damn, this guy's really speaking his truth right now. And at that age, too, you're like, damn, that's what it's like, yep. You know, fuck.
So that song is, you're right, it's all time. It's probably a top 10 song of the 90s. And we've all been in a version of that song in our life at some point, you know, in time when, with a relationship. Maybe not all of the stuff that is being said, but we've all felt like we've been taken advantage of and not treated fairly. So everybody can relate to it too, right? We're all like, we all know that feeling. So I think throw that into the mix too is why it resonated and became such a phenomenon. And what an intro. Everybody knows that intro. My wife knows nothing about The Offspring, knows songs by them, but knows nothing about them. And I played both of those videos back to back for her tonight, Come Out and Play and Self Esteem. And I was like, you know this one? She was like, oh yeah, I've heard this before. Like, nice. Perfect. Like, you made my point for me, baby. Here we go.
I mean, just the line, the more you suffer, the more it shows you really care, lives like rent free
so
in my
good.
Head forever.
So good. And then, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, yeah.
He's gonna, can you validate that for me? Because I need validation. I have none. The song is about that. The whole thing is about that. It's fucking perfect.
When she's saying, oh, she wants only me. Then I wonder why she sleeps with my friends.
Yeah, right.
When she's saying, oh, that I'm like a disease. Then I wonder how much more I can spend. Man, at all time. And I know this song has been played to death, but it's survived that and landed on its feet. Like, it just, fuck, so good. And then the intro. La, la, yeah, la, la, la.
That's
like,
what I'm
how
saying,
do you come
man.
Up with that? What the,
Ooh, how do you... 545 million streams on Spotify.
Yeah. Numbers don't lie. Ball don't lie on that one. That was, man, all time. I think it's my favorite Offspring song. Replay value is, I say it a lot, I like it more now than ever.
It is easily a top three Offspring song. For me, it might be number one. I would agree.
Yeah, I think also it doesn't get old because even if there was no vocals, just that instrumental riff is just fucking thrash music therapy. You know, so it's like, nah, 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 nah. You're like, all right, life's good.
Was that Except Smells Like Teen Spirit, Nate?
It did sound like it.
It is a little bit like that. Yeah. If only we had Greg here to try to play the guitar for us and have the fucking mics not picking up again.
Then it'll be a long time. Classic, fast punk song. Short, sweet, 2 minutes, 45 seconds. And then you get into, and I got to come clean. I didn't know Killboy Powerhead was a cover. No clue.
That makes sense, and I don't think I knew that either.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like, you listen to it, and I'm like, yeah, it's a little different. It's fast. It's fast. It's a punk song. It's by a band called The Digits, which, I don't know. My guess is this song put them on the map. I could be wrong. I apologize if I am wrong. But 10-year-old me didn't know that, and 30-year-old me didn't know that, and almost 40-year-old me didn't know that until prepping. So
I did not know that. And I'd heard it, I mean, a million times because I listened to this record a million times, but I didn't know that. And it did, now that you say it, it feels not like an Offspring song, even though it feels they made it their own. It doesn't like sound like some of the other stuff that they did and will do.
And like outside of So Alone, it's the shortest song on the album. You know what I mean? It's a little different and
quick little ripper.
And then What Happened to You, which we said was, yeah, it's Tony Hawk soundtrack all day. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That one's a little different from the rest of the record too, but like, I love that they took those chances. Like, let's throw a cover in there. Let's throw What Happened to You in there. Let's throw, Come Out and Play in there, which is a little bit of a divergence from some of the other stuff. And it all worked. Like, it makes the record what it is. And it gives you an insight into them as, you know, probably music fans on top of the fact of the musicians that they are and what they were able to put together with this.
Yeah, and it's another song that, you know, their records after have those tracks as well. So it's another like preview for what's to come is like kind of diverse, you know, collection of songs, with that one being kind of a mixed bag, random track. What Happened to You? At least, I mean, it's almost like a polka song. Or I guess you said ska, Twan, which makes more sense.
No Method Man on this album, though. No,
no.
Not chances in that direction. And then So Alone, we said it's short, ripper, and then Not the One. All time, I think, Offspring song. I forgot about this song until we thought, you know, we talked about doing this episode, and I was like, oh man, Not the One, not the fucking one, banger.
Another great riff to start too.
And then the closer, Smash. I think
all
it's
fucking
my
time.
It's my second favorite song on the album, and the guitars clearly have an edge to them. Like, this was a good place for the song, and I know it's, you know, joined with some secret stuff there, but man, what a fucking way to land the plane.
A secret song in the 90s? No way.
Yeah. I know, Dookie had it, this had it, like...
Everything had it.
Similar bass lines. Part of me is like, did they conspire, a conspiracy of one on this one? Did they?
Yeah, no, it's amazing that that was a thing. And I mean, I loved it. You were like, oh, there's all this time and the song just ended. Like, what do we do here? And it's just, don't fall asleep with it on, because everything will scare the shit out of you sometimes.
Actually, let's pause on that. Because like in the streaming era, it's very clear that a song is that long. But back in the day, if you didn't hear about it from word of mouth, you stumbled upon it because you let your Discman play, or I didn't own this on cassette. So I don't even know if that was the secret song was on the cassette, but on a CD player, it was you stumbled on it. You all day stumbled on it.
Totally. Yeah. You just let it play.
Yeah. Smash is, it's my probably second favorite Offspring song. And, you know, I'm not a trendy asshole. Do what I want, do what I feel like. And don't give a fuck if it's good enough for you because I'm alive. Okay. Yep. Way to sell that to a 10-year-old me. I want to know more about what this is about. I want more of these songs in my life.
Well, it's funny, as, you know, 8 to 10-year-old from the East Coast, we have no context of anything about this band before this point, and we clearly don't know anything that's to come. So we're living in the moment, and it's like the visuals, the optics of the band, the cool band name, Smash. You'd say the band, you know, it's like that meme, Smash, Smash, Smash. It's that fucking thing.
Yes, exactly.
But like as a 10-year-old, you're like, this is, you know, Gotta Get Away, Genocide, Killboy, Powerhead. It's like, this is, it hit us at the right time, but it had the chops to back it up. It wasn't all optics. It wasn't cool band name, just that. It was, this is fucking rad. And outside of Green Day, and I don't know what came first in my musical journey, it was very close, but it was unlike anything I'd ever heard. Anything. Up to that point, it was hair metal from my dad. It was grunge from the same outlet that I discovered Offspring on. Or it was like Peter Gabriel's Sledgehammer from like the yeah, best videos of all time. You know what I mean? Like it was always number two. Like that was what I knew. And man, this knocked me / us on our ass.
So you said something there that, and it jogged my memory. I wrote this down. I learned a lot from this record. There were a couple records in the 90s that did that for us. Like, I didn't know what Road Rage was. Bad Habit introduced me to Road Rage. Yeah. I didn't know what Genocide was. I'm upset that I still do, and it's still in the news, but I didn't know, you know, like it's not a thing that you, 10-year-old me was aware of, but I learned from it. Rage Against the Machine taught us stuff with, you know, Township Rebellion and Freedom and all that stuff too. But like we learned things from these records in the mid 90s because it was our first kind of exposure to stuff like that. And, you know, being taken advantage of by a partner in Self-Esteem. You just didn't know. Like, and they taught me words and phrases and concepts listening to this record. It's like, I need to go figure out what that means because I don't know what that means. I'm 10. I have never heard that before. I got to go find a dictionary and look it up.
Yeah, it's a really good point. It's like watching a rated R movie. You're like, what is going on in the world? This is life. This is, I don't know what's going on. This is just too much sensory overload.
I'm with you. Youth energy, Nitro Youth Energy.
Yeah, what is that?
What is that? Actually, speaking of Nitro, this is a question I had, and I could probably wiki this and find the answer. But was Nitro Records a thing at this point in time? Because this came out on Epitaph.
Yeah.
And where I'm going with this is, it is the best-selling independent release of all time, and I'm sure Dexter wishes it came out on Nitro. So was Nitro even a thing?
I'm looking it up, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I would probably think not. Like, my guess is he saw the success of this and is like, we need to, you know, be a part of this. We need a slice of this moving forward.
Founded in 1994, same time frame.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
But that was same year it was released, but it probably hadn't blown up yet. So maybe it's Dexter just being a fucking genius, seeing the writing on the wall.
Yeah, Dexter and Greg Kay, bassist at the time of the Offspring. Formed it in 1994. Wow. And Universal was the distributor.
Yeah, so this sold 11 million records worldwide. So if you listen to us or like Crime and Stereo, we had Alex Dunn of Crime and Stereo on, They signed to Nitro back in the mid-2000s. Alex said when he was on the pod that up until, I think maybe through Blink-182's self-titled album, so the big one with I Miss You, the Offspring had sold, what, twice as many records as Blink?
Yeah, it's wild.
It's crazy. And the thing is like they, when you think about it, it makes sense, right? So they go from Smash to Ixnay to Americana, and then was Conspiracy one after that?
Yeah, makes sense.
I mean, that's a run for the ages, and they were moving some serious units.
Yeah, and they were, I mean, putting out pop songs on the radio that were being played everywhere at that time, too. And those seeds were sown with this record that they could do that. But and obviously it became, you know, 11 million copies worldwide. That's didn't happen to punk bands in 1993 or 1992. Not to that level that we're still talking about them today. And this record celebrating 30 years in a couple of weeks. And it's as fresh as it was then.
Well, there's a camp that fell off the wagon. We'll put it this way. There's a camp that fell off the wagon after, maybe not after this album, but after Ixnay. When Americana dropped, you get Pretty Fly. Like, yep. Pretty Fly is, I'm sure the band would not argue, it is a single, it's a departure, blah, blah, blah. However, Americana has tracks that could have been on Smash. Americana has tracks that could have been on Ixnay. I'm trying to think of what I prefer Smash. Ixnay has tracks.
Yep.
But Americana also has tracks. Like, yeah, the singles, like, they were down your throat. They were also catchy, but those weren't the only songs on the album. Like, they still wrote those. Like, they, you know what I mean? It's like, those were killer singles.
Well, and it's a great point. You can go, and Nate, remember we saw them the summer of years ago? Whenever it was, down at Hampton Beach, yeah, you, me, and Rob, and our buddy Nick. And it's still the only VIP pass that I've ever gotten that did nothing. I still have it. They bought me the poster from the show. But, like, they had so many tracks. Seeing them live, that was one of those bands that you were just like, you can't, like, you're missing stuff, and you played 25 songs. I don't know how you did it. But this is insanity that you have this many big songs. And yeah, some people fell off because they didn't like some of the poppier rock stuff, but, like, Dexter buys planes, so I think he was right.
Dude, that's a good point about that show, too. The fact that they're playing, they were, I don't know if they're still doing this, but playing set lists that long and at a high tempo, too. They were, like, a full-on punk band. I mean, Hampton Beach Casino is a relatively small room for them, I feel like, at this stage, but they treated it like it was back in the day, and they ripped through. You say, do you have the set list in front of you? I think it was in the 20s. In the mid-20s or something like that.
I got it. They had 20 songs that night, and every one of them is huge. And they were on tour for, this is 2012, so maybe Days Go By. Does that sound right? Cruising California, which is a song we talked about with Rob, Summer Jams. Yeah, beside the point. My point there is that there were just so many big songs, and they left songs off playing 20 songs. They could have played 30 songs, and everybody would have known every one of them.
So I was thinking today, is this album worthy of 11 million copies worldwide, it being a groundbreaking album, whatever, whatever. And where I landed was 100% yes. Like, this album was not the product of me being 10 and liking it. It was the product of it being completely new, not just to me, but really to everyone. Unless you are like a Cali dude in his mid-20s or late teens who lived that scene. For the most of us normies, this was, I could have been 30 and I was first exposed to this, it would have fucking hit all day.
So true. And they weren't industry plant. It wasn't their first record that got all the airplay because they were trying to be forced down our throats. This is their, you know, third record. They've been around 10 years as a band. They just hit the point where they wrote the songs that everybody vibed with. And that's the way music went at that time.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. Also, it actually made me think of something you mentioned earlier, where, like, everything about the record, the production, the rawness of the lyrics, the instrumentals, it's really like a band's band in terms of, you know, everyone putting a 10 out of 10 effort. And so, like, it's undeniable, you know, for anyone, any age. So for us to hear it at such a ripe age at 10. But yeah, even if I heard it today in my late 30s, it'd be like, this record's solid. I mean, just the guitar lines alone are enough for me to keep listening. And the lyrics are just diverse enough that it's captivating. So yeah, you're spot on there.
All right, I'm gonna put you guys on the spot. Hands up, away from the keyboard. What is Dexter's real first name?
I don't know.
Yeah, no idea.
It's Brian. I didn't know that.
Huh.
Is his middle name Dexter?
Brian Keith Dexter Holland.
Okay. So
Dexter in quotes. So I think maybe a nickname. Yeah, it was Brian Keith Holland. So Dexter is a stage name.
Nice. I like that.
So what is Noodles then?
That's his real name.
Exactly. Yep. The nudes. We've interacted with the nudes back when he used to be on Twitter.
It's Kevin Wasserman.
Nice. Yep. Noodles and Dexter, that works. Like, it's just, I mean, it's peanut butter and jelly at this point. So yeah, 30 years of Offspring, the Offspring smash. And we wouldn't be here as a podcast 4 years in without it. So happy to have been able to dig deep on this record tonight. And, the three of us getting to do this again is always a blast. And I'm happy that we're still here doing it 4 years in.
And you know what? We're not the only ones with these memories of this album. I want to hear it. If you vibed with this album 30 years ago or today, DMs are open. Emails open. Snap. Do we have a Snapchat? I don't think we do have a Snapchat. That's the only one. We're not getting down with that. TikTok us. Is that a verb? I don't know. Whatever it is, hit us up. If you're a millennial, my guess is this album meant something to you. So let us know.
Yeah, good point. And for us out here on the West Coast, or myself and anyone listening, the band is actually playing this record front to back on June 1st in Anaheim at the Honda Center. It's one of one. I'm hoping that they extend this into a full-on tour. And I was actually kind of hoping it was a smaller room, but I think maybe they're test marketing that show as a proof of concept to see what happens. But I might have to go to this, especially after talking about it today and listening to the full record in its entirety for the first time in a really long time.
You need to go to that show.
I know I should.
Can I break something to you, Nate?
What's up?
11 million copies is proof of value. It's proof of concept, right? My friend.
Yeah.
They could tour this. They could absolutely tour on this right now.
Actually, hey, did you guys go to the Offspring show at the Civic Center back in the late 90s?
No.
I didn't. Did you, Nate?
I would have gone to that, but I was at Woodstock 99.
Ooh.
Right. Sorry.
Okay. Wow. Flex. What is it? Low-key flex? What's the tip?
Low-key flex.
Low-key flex.
Weird flex.
Weird flex, bro. Yeah, no, I didn't go to that, but I was in the middle of watching the world burn at Woodstock 99, yeah. Which we did a whole episode on. It's back there. Go listen to it.
Yep. Fun tangent on the side of that, though. The Woodstock show, Dexter would talk in between songs in the same, like, decibel or, like, his, like, scream voice, yelling voice or whatever. So me and my brother looked at each other laughing like, oh, is that his normal voice? He just always sounds like that. So obviously he's yelling like to the crowd. Yeah. He's shouting to the crowd.
What do you want to get for dinner?
It was, yeah. Anyways, good times.
The lineup was the Offspring, Lit, and the Dickies.
Wow.
At the Cumberland County Civic Center, summer of 99. So yeah. That would have been obviously after Americana. That would have been
and Litt's Place in the Sun was just out that year, so that's a big tour for them together, because Litt is at the peak of their powers probably at that point.
Man, so that's from an Offspring perspective, you're getting likely what Offspring, Ixnay, and Americana tracks,
right? Pretty awesome.
Good time to see him, and I'm sure they peppered in some early shit. But wow,
yep,
Offspring. We haven't talked about them a lot, which is insane. Like, the Alex Prime episode was probably the time we talked about him the most.
Yeah, right? And we brought up Dexter's, like, side project with the Hot Sauce.
That's right.
And we've done a couple, like, ancillary things around them. I think we've talked about that show before that Nate and I went to. And obviously it being, you know, monumental for us as early music fans, but never did the deep dive like tonight. So, yeah, I think that's probably it, man. Let's say thanks and good night and appreciate everybody listening, and all that stuff's coming at the end. And if you want to, you know, be a supporter, do that. That'd be great. We'd love to continue to do this for another 4 years or more. Who knows?
Thanks. Good night. Whole catalog for you to explore. Dig in, my friends.
Cheers, nerds. We'll see you in Anaheim.
Peace, potheads.
See you, Noodles. I know you're listening.
There. I hope you enjoyed our time together today. you know, it seems harder and harder just to sit back and enjoy the finer things in life. Well, till next time. Ta-ta.
All right, guys. Do you know what I did all night?
Oh, man.
I weaved in a theme all night in the episode.
Maybe Offspring song titles that you...
Close. I mean, we did that, but I did pick another record and said every song title from that record. I did. Yep.
Oh, wow.
Any guesses on what album I might have picked?
Give me...
I mean, Township Rebellion should have given it up.
Oh, no.
That was the hardest one, man.
When you said the Fistful of Steel thing, I was like, you know, that's a good way to say it, actually.
So, yes, every Rage Against the Machine song from the Rage Against the Machine self-titled record was said during the episode by me.
Jeez. Oh, man. My nerd brain, like, needs to like, listen back to this stat.
I'll send it to you as quickly as I can, my friend.
Thank you for listening to Patio Slave. We are at Patio Slave on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all of the places that you can find us on social media. Facebook, Patio Slave Podcast. YouTube, Patio Slave Podcast there. Email us at patioslavepodcast@gmail.com. And hey, if you want to become a supporter, click on the link at the bottom of the episode and give us $1, give us $5. It keeps the lights on, keeps us going. We really appreciate that stuff. Thank you.